Yeah, I would just say train harder and take more chances. There was some times where, and I'm sure most of us as performers and artists have had, where you're like, really, is this the career that's for me? It's hard to get into. I'm not making much money. I don't seem to be getting the breaks. And for a long time, I tried to hold that Monday to Friday job or the 9 to 5 job, as well as acting and stunting. And it wasn't until I kind of took the leap, that the career took off, right? And I was able to focus my time on training, getting out there and promoting myself and my business. That's the big thing. Just, take the chance in yourself and do it and stay humble.
Laughing Vikings Live. High vibe chats with actors, comedians, and creators, plus stand-up comedy, sketch comedy, and most importantly, you. That's right, join us every Monday for new episodes, and you can be a part of the show on Facebook Live, YouTube Live, and Twitch. Ask questions and interact in the comments, and make sure to share this with your actor, comedian, and creator friends so they can be a part of the show too. Can't make a live show? No problem. You can catch up on your favorite podcast platform and visit laughingvikings.com to find out how you can join the cast and crew. All right, it's time for today's show. Buckle up and make sure you stick around to the end because we have a special surprise for you. All right, ladies and gentlemen, it is Laughing Vikings Live. Happy Monday Fun Day. Let's go.
Hey,
hey,
hello, good sir. I see you in the other room here in Laughing Vikings. To see you. This is episode 5-8.
Yes, it is 5-8.
Moving on up. Moving on up.
Oh my God!
How was your weekend?
It was great. We did a show, and my God, is it great to be doing live theater again?
Yeah, like, we did a show. I've been on a roster with a company called Big Time Murder, headed by Peter Dillon. Shout out to Peter and Big Time Murder. And they do mostly corporate shows, primarily corporate, sometimes private events, and primarily murder mysteries from groups from like 10 people up to, I think I've done ones close to 1,000 people, usually at nice swanky venues. So if you're if there's a meal or something as a cast member, you're usually getting nice fancy buffet dinners. So, well, back in the day, they'd be buffets. I don't know if buffets exist post pandemic. They might be. Are buffets done now? Maybe buffets are over. I think buffets are extinct after pandemics. But we had a great show, and I think this was the first one back. It was at a swanky venue called the National Club, which is a very well-to-do, fancy club right down on
Bay Street
in Toronto. I'm assuming membership is probably somewhere between $10,000 and $50,000. Maybe I'm lowballing it and it's more expensive than that. But a guy put on a fantastic show. It was his daughter's 30th birthday, and she had about 50 of her family and friends around, and we did a wacky, zany murder mystery for her. But it was, yeah, you're right. It was really cool to be doing. For me, it was almost more fun being around cast members. I'm going to say this. I enjoy seeing cast members and other actors and talking backstage before and after the show almost more than I enjoyed doing the show kind of thing. So for me, doing shows is that side of things. Maybe I missed more than the show proper. But the show went great, and every year Peter's got shows lined up. You could probably go to bigtimemurder.com or zoommystery.com. And if you want to do like an international show where you have people from all over the world tuning in, his pandemic pivot was to switch to Zoom shows. So you can check out Zoom Mystery. And the big news is on Saturday, this was BK Broiler's first show as a newly minted cast member of Big Time Murder. Although this show, you are stage manager. And then in the next show, you're stage manager slash a character. And beyond that, you'll be playing characters, I'm sure, on a regular basis. The Christmas season's always jammed with shows. Might be a little different as people are still getting used to being around live people and live entertainment this Christmas. But welcome aboard, BK Broiler.
Yeah, I'm very excited to get going with it. It's a lot of fun. Yeah. Oh, it was great just watching the show and like being there ready for the queue and just and seeing it all and seeing like the people beside me and laughing with people. And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, remember people? Remember when people used to get together and do stuff together?
Yeah.
Wow. Those were the days. And they're back. Yes. So that was great. Anything else? Any other weekend recap?
I don't think so.
Let's get into it. Our first guest, he's an award-winning actor, fight director, stunt coordinator, done all kinds of TV and film. I've had the extreme privilege of being in fights that he's directed and on some of these stunt teams, some of those clips, you might've just seen them. So let's bring him into the studio. He's also the co-owner of Steel and Steed. Please give it up for Justin Moses. There he is. Welcome. Hey, good to see you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Nice that you've cleaned up all the blood and all the shrapnel from yourself and
and the copious amounts of mud. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Good to see you. Welcome. That was bringing me back. That was a few years ago. I did a lot of days on Civil War Chronicles with you, which might have been where I first met you. And we were in these old timey, hot. The first round I did on that show, it was like, I feel like it was late August, September. It was 30 degrees plus. We're all in these wool Civil War soldier uniforms, and the day that I really remember is my group was running up a hill repeatedly. We had to run up this hill probably for 30 takes while mortars were blowing off. It was super fun, but we were all like exhausted and borderline heat stroke by the end of the day, but it was amazing. And then there was another day on that show that was later. It was like November, and it was rainy and cold and miserable, and I distinctly remember we were trying to take a hill. We got off a boat and then we had to run up this muddy, muddy hill while being shot at. And I remember thinking in my head, this is fucking awful. Imagine how much worse it would be if we were actually getting shot with real bullets right now. So it was like, yeah, even as an actor, I was like, this is a horrible experience as a human right now. And we're just play fighting.
It wasn't meant to be method, but it was pretty method.
It was very method. Yeah. There was like, you weren't catching any actors with smiles on their faces by accident on that day.
No.
And yeah. And then the other one we did was Fear Thy Neighbor. We had that big parking lot scrap where I was choking a guy out and all kinds of people were piling on. That was fun.
Yeah.
It was great. But
I got to pepper spray someone that day. That was fun.
Yeah, that's right. You did. You got in on the action too. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, welcome. It's good to see you in non-violent podcast platform here. We're just going to be chill. Although who knows, you can throw a few punches. I did before we get into it. Actually, no, I'll come back to this. We want to just throw you right into the fire here. The first segment that we always do with all of our guests is called the 1 minute life story. Brandon's going to throw 60 seconds up on the clock. And your task is to run us through Justin's life from birth to now. And you got 60 seconds to do that. You ready?
Ready.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is Justin Moses from Steel and Steed's life story in 1 minute. Go.
I was born in Orangeville, Ontario. I was adopted about a day shy of a month after I was born. I stayed in Mitchell with my parents, which for those of you that don't know is a little blink town on the other side of Stratford, for 21 years. Before I went to college, I did musical theater performance at college. It kind of shaped where I was going with the acting career. I did not finish my musical theater performance degree because I found stage combat and fighting for film and fell in love with it. I met some great people in Toronto, started doing a bunch of drop-in classes there, ended up getting married, then not being married, which was also pushing me to do more of the acting and fight stuff. Then I built a company, and the rest, as you all know, is history.
Ding, 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 ding. There it is. That's Justin Moses' one-minute life story. All right. Before we get into some things, I had some questions pop up from just watching that reel. I understand how when a guy gets shot, you have the squib and blood can explode and it looks like he's actually being shot. But in this samurai show, there was a shot of a sword coming from behind out the front of a guy. How do you make it look like a sword is bursting through a man's chest?
So we can shoot it one of two ways. One is just complete CGI. So we use either a half sword or we use camera angles from the back to make it look like someone's being stabbed, and then just have our CGI artists render the sword coming through. The other way to do it is we shoot basically a plate shot of the action with no sword, and then a second shot where the actor is actually wearing a piece of a sword that's attached to a rig on their front. And then when they react to it, the sword's already there, so they can composite the two together and it makes it look like a sword's popping through.
Movie magic. You see, yeah. We're learning here. And the other shot that was great is the guy in Civil War Chronicles pulling the bayonet out of his face.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one of my favorite shots. It's gruesomely amazing.
I love the Viking shot where you pulled the knife out of the guy's head.
Yeah. So it's the same thing kind of with both of those is with the bayonets through the mouth. We shot everything from behind and had the real bayonet go, or I'll call it real. It was a metal doll version, but it was safely thrust in front of the face so that camera angle looks like it goes through. Then the actor went and got the prosthetic piece attached, applied. And then we shot it from the other side where when the camera rolled around, we had a sawed off blade that was pressed against his mouth. And then that allowed him to start to pull it. And we had the prosthetic piece on the other side. So yeah, it looks pretty gruesome. Wow. And the knife shot's pretty much the same thing. We had the knife go in, put the blood in the mouth, had a shorter knife so that when it came out, he could spit the blood and it looked gnarly.
Nice. Yeah, super gnarly. You guys do some really cool stuff. We had your one of your peers, Daniel Levinson, on a few weeks ago as well, who does some great stuff, as you know, in the world of stunts and fight coordination and fight direction. So I want to take it back to, we always like to know how people get started in this weird, wacky industry. Do you remember, and maybe this was as a kid, but do you remember what your first performance was when you either first got on stage or caught this acting performance bug?
So Pirates of Penzance was the first show that I saw at the Stratford Festival. And it was wild. I was probably too young to really get some of the nuances of it. But it's a fun show. It's upbeat. The singing and dancing are amazing. And of course it was on the festival stage. Avon stage at the festival. So it was, you know, really high quality performance, production, and stellar actors. So that's what kind of got me into it. And then over the years, because I grew up around Stratford, I was able to attend a bunch of the Shakespeare shows, a bunch of their musicals, which got me into it. And then I started with community theater and kind of went from there.
Do you remember your, as a performer, your first community theater performance?
So other than doing music festivals and stuff like that, my actual first theatrical performance would have been Oklahoma. And I was, nice. I was at the London Community Players. We did the production of Oklahoma. And then the following year I did Pajama Game in Stratford, which is a very obscure, really random show.
Pajama Game, not to be confused with Squid Game.
Correct.
Different show. Nice. All right. So it was pirates. So there would have been sword fights in there. Was that what got you hooked on the sword fighting?
I mean, you know, as a young male growing up in the country, I always, you know, went out in the backfield with sticks and pretended they were swords or guns or all that kind of stuff, right? So that just kind of allowed me to do the same thing. But someone gave me a real sword to do it with. So, you know, I can't really say no to that.
That's super cool. I did the same thing when I was growing up as a kid. We lived in the country, and that was literally like as we're deciding like how we're going to spend our next couple hours of this sunny day. It'd be like, you want to go play sticks? But sticks, yeah. Sticks with swords or yeah. Guns sometimes. Yeah, yeah. How did you make the transition from amateur community theater into professional? Do you remember your first paid gig?
My first paid gig would have been a live show. We did Renaissance festivals. So there's a couple around, or used to be around Ontario. There was the Pirate Festival, which was in Milton, then in Guelph. There was the Ontario Renaissance Festival, which was in Milton, then the Royal Botanical Gardens in Hamilton. And then I believe it went back to Milton before it closed, as well as the Upper Canadian Renaissance Festival near Kingston. So there was a few. So my first paid gig was the Renaissance Festival here in Milton. And it wasn't a show per se where we had a lot of lines to remember, but we were soldiers in the 13th century, and we basically just beat the shit out of each other with swords. So that was pretty fun.
Sounds super fun. Yeah. Like, so was that sort of like what they might call atmospheric actors, where you're sort of around doing your stick and doing your thing, but more like a demo versus a full.
Exactly. Out scene. Yeah. And even the fights, they were, because we wore real armor. So the fights were choreographed in the sense that we knew who was going to win the fight, but it was up to us to safely do it while making it look realistic. So there was a lot of hitting each other with these fake swords. So,
but it sounds like you guys had a lot of creative control over how the fights were going to go, right?
Sorry, you cut out there for a second.
Sorry. It sounds like you had a lot of creative control over what sort of fights and what sort of stunts you were doing at that point, though.
Yes, we did. And even the weapon system. So we had to use whatever weapon systems would have been available at the time. But you didn't always have to do like sword and shield. You could do sword and axe, or axe and shield, or just a sword. And we didn't want to hurt each other, but you know, it was always fun to just, you know, go out and bang each other up a little bit and then enjoy the rest of the festival, and then spend a bunch of money on stuff like other swords and armor because all of the vendors were there.
And we have a comment from Jason Patry. Childhood is a very transferable skill here in this biz. And it is. It is.
Yeah, a lot of imagination. I mean, that's where we all learn to play make-believe. And I think most of us as adults are still in that Peter Pan world of having fun and playing make-believe.
I still strongly debate grabbing a stick off the ground every time I'm like walking outside and like just doing some swashbuckling, and that's it. You know, just have some fun.
Nice. Justin, I got a couple questions for you that we weren't planning, but now that I see your stunt reel. First one, I sort of all under the heading of safety, but you guys do some crazy things, even though everything is geared to be as safe as possible. Have you ever had anything go wrong where you've had an injury? And then sort of a follow-up to that is, has there been a scenario where you're like, and you don't need to name names or production or any of that, but has there ever been a scenario where you're like, can't do it, not doing it, too unsafe?
Yeah, so I mean, for the first question, whenever we go out to do real stunts, so, and I would call that anything where we're doing like a car hit, a high fall, rigging, fire burns, you're going to take your licks. We all in the industry, especially with stunts, you know, you prepare for getting hurt, and you're going to get hurt minorly most times, right? Whether it's vest rub from getting jerked around, you're just hitting the ground over and over and over, that kind of stuff. And those are the injuries that we don't want them, but those are the ones that we accept. What we don't want is the broken bones, the hospital trips, the nasty cuts that require stitches, or worse. That's what we really strive to not have on set. And when we develop stunts, we do so with what's the worst case scenario and how do we avoid it? And so other than a true accident on set, you know, I like to think that my team and the professionals that I work with in this industry, we're all pretty vigilant about making sure that there isn't any injuries or accidents that could have been avoided.
Nice. Yeah. Anytime I was with you, I always felt very safe. And that was as a guy with not very much background between doing the rehearsals and safety equipment and wearing pads or having pads on the ground. Yeah, everything did feel very safe. I guess it'd be similar to a football player in the NFL. Is there's an inherent level of risk, and you know that on the day after the game, you're going to be having some aches and pains. You're going to feel like you got beat up, but you're going to recover and not have to go to the hospital, essentially, is a fair comparison.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Cool. The second part of that question, has there ever been a scenario or like maybe a director of production, they wanted something to happen and you're like, we can't do this without putting someone too much at risk?
Yeah, there's been a couple times where I've been approached or during our initial discussion with the creative team, they want me to have an actor do a stunt. And for the most part, when it's something like a fire burn or rigging where it's a high level of stress, a high level of experience that you need to make sure that you don't get hurt or hurt somebody else doing it. I've had a few that have really pushed and been like, we'll find somebody else who will do it. And it's like, that's fine if you want to do that. But, you know, when someone gets hurt and they are, you know, I'm not going to be on the project and I don't want to be on the project. This is the way that it's going. The other aspect that we get a lot of is people who want to get into stunts and they're like, you know, I don't even need the pads. You can just punch me or you can just, you know, kick me through it. And it's like, well, no, because you have to do it 200 times. You know, and I need you not to, after the first time, look like you just got put through, you know, the blender, because you need to do it again and again and making it look like you haven't just been beat up for real. So that's another thing that we get a lot of is the people that are just like, no, I can do it. Just let them hit me. And that's a big no-no in my book too.
Right. Sounds like a little bit of toxic masculinity coming through right there. I'm the opposite of that, by the way. I'm like, can we get some more pads? Maybe some of those, maybe some of bubble wrap around my face and my body. Nice. Brandon, you got a couple questions. Yeah.
Yeah. Justin, I've been loving looking at your website and I'm really excited to hear, how was Steel and Steed founded?
So my business partner, Marie Beth, she came to me in 2014 and she has a lot of experience with horses. She went to Guelph University and got a number of degrees in the equine field. She had a couple horses and she came to me asking how she could get them into film because it was something that she had wanted to do and had been looking for someone who didn't just immediately, you know, dismiss her because she was either a girl or didn't have film experience. Mm-hmm. So it was a great moment where we kind of combined forces, her doing more of the horse side of things, me doing the stunt side of things, and really be able to provide a much broader service to film productions than just someone who can choreograph some fights or someone who has a couple horses. Because as you guys probably both know, Toronto isn't a major hub for filming horse stuff, but there is enough shows that require a horse here and there, like Civil War, Age of Samurai, it's needed, but it's not a huge business. It's not something that everyone would be able to get into and make lots of money doing. And the same with the stunts, right? There's a lot of stunt coordinators out there, both in the union and the non-union world. So how do we make the business stand out from everyone else so that the companies that are looking for this type of production value can, you know, come to us and get kind of everything in one stop?
Quick question, just because this is timely. Obviously, the tragedy that happened in the States with Alec Baldwin on set with that gun. Is there any, like, when something that like that happens and you see that, does that, how does that affect you? Do you have any meetings? Do you change anything, or do you do a relook at your protocols? Just when something horrific like that does happen, what is the response for you and your team?
Yeah. So, I mean, whenever there's an incident on set, where someone's been injured or worse, we always try to have a bit of introspection and just how can we make sure that something like this doesn't happen. In that particular case, I know there's been a lot of, I'm going to call it knee-jerk reactions, where people are saying guns shouldn't be on set, like live guns shouldn't be on set, you know, go with airsoft, all that kind of stuff. We use a lot of airsoft. We have used real guns on set. We used live guns in Civil War. We used them on Age of Samurai. They're not dangerous if all of the safety protocol is followed. And something like having live ammo on set is just, it's 100% unacceptable. You know, to load a gun, there's shaker rounds where it looks like a real bullet, but there's no propellant in it, so it can't be accidentally fired, right? It's a tragedy. It should never happen. But it's all about safety and not letting people walk on you, right? We've been on some other sets where we've had bigger named actors, and I know some people can get a bit flustered around them and don't want to speak up and say, hey, you shouldn't be doing this, it's not safe. It doesn't matter. Everyone's human. You know, we've played around with each other on set with, you know, knives and swords and guns and all that kind of stuff. But we always make sure, like, as soon as we come in the morning, you know, just like when we've done it with you, I always show you that this is, you know, either a fake gun or, you know, it's not loaded. There's no airsoft rounds in it. There's no real rounds in it if it's an actual, you know, live fire gun. I want to make sure that you guys feel safe. I want my team to make sure that everything is safe. And then it's common sense, right? Like, don't point a gun at somebody if you don't want to shoot them. Don't point a gun. That's it, right? Some of the other tragedies that have happened in terms of stunt people or actors being injured, obviously Deadpool 2 a few years ago, there was an incident on that. Again, we did the same thing. It's just, how do we make sure that something like this is not going to happen on a set? How do we make sure that we have safety procedures, train our people, train the actors that we're dealing with or other stunt people that are coming in? Because, you know, you need looks, different looks to double people. So I might not have someone who fits that bill. I got to bring in somebody that I don't know from the outside. Still have to make sure that they're being safe, they're comfortable, and, you know, the avoidable is absolutely avoidable.
On Deadpool, was that a car accident or was that a fall?
It was a motorcycle accident. So right. She traveled across the road and into a building. So, wow.
Yeah. What was the next question, Brandon? I think you've answered some of this already, but an actor looking to get into the stunt world, what should they know? And this could be someone wanting to get into it in general or looking to join the Steel and Steed team. Is there certain basic training and basic things that they need to know and have under their belt to start? What advice would you give to them?
Sure. So the biggest thing to have is a reel. If you're looking at getting into stunts in film, you know, without coming out to courses and stuff like that. If I can't see that you've done it and done it safely, then I can't throw you into a scenario that, you know, is potentially life threatening. You know, it's just, it wouldn't be safe and, you know, I couldn't in good faith do it. If you want to become a stunt person or even actors, we get a lot of actors who want to learn a little bit about stunts because it makes them more sellable as an actor. Because then they can do some of the basic stunts themselves. They don't have to have a stunt person come in for absolutely everything. Mm-hmm. Martial arts are always a great thing the problem with martial arts is it's on point with being either self-defense or a combat sport. When we start doing it for film, we have to make it look realistic, but then we also have to make sure that it's safe. So having just someone who's a martial artist alone, you got to get out of that comfort zone and out of that, well, this is how my sensei taught me, or this is how we did it on the, you know, on the mat in the dojo. Because it does change, to make sure that camera angles work. You know, I don't necessarily need to be directly in front of you to make a punch cell. We can be 6 feet apart, and with the right camera angle, I can still, you know, make it look like I just took your head off. But martial arts does help because it gives you that ability in your body. Same with dance. If you can dance, and, you know, jazz, tap, ballet, partner dance, swing dance, ballroom, all that kind of stuff where you're learning choreo and the choreo is getting into your body, that is always a great thing to do, because the fight stuff, it's all choreo. It's dance with weapons, right? So coming to courses, you know, if you want to go out and do, if you can't get to one of my courses, or, you know, Dan at Rake Your Wit, because he has a ton of great stuff as well. There's some others in the Toronto area that do drop-in classes. If you can't get out to one of the industry classes, look at doing some martial arts. Look at doing some dance. And you don't have to belt. You don't have to be like a, you know, second-degree black belt in whatever. Just so that it's in your body. You know how to throw a punch. You know how to, you know, block a punch, throw a kick, do a break fall. That's probably one of the biggest things that you need to learn, is how to make sure that when you fall, you can fall safely and properly, so that you don't break a wrist, you don't break an ankle. Other than that, just get out and train.
And you, speaking of training, you do run a lot of those workshops. The best place to find those is that at steelandsteed.ca, or so on your social media, you often post as well.
We do. So the website will have a list of upcoming workshops. And then both the Instagram page and the Facebook page has a you know, what's coming up, events that we're doing, spot on them as well. So,
and for those people that aren't too familiar with Steel and Steed, do you want to just sort of give a brief rundown of the sort of the types of workshops that you do offer?
Yeah, so we're getting back into a weekly drop-in class, and the drop-in classes, they range from hand-to-hand fighting, sword fighting, knife fighting, falls 101. Sometimes we'll get into some of the choreo. So it'll be like 2 or 3 weeks or more where we'll actually work on a specific piece of choreo with a partner, so that you can take it from being something that looks okay to something that we could actually film and be part of your reel with costumes and whatever else. From the drop-in workshops, we also do stunt driving and precision driving. We do fireburn workshops for those who are bold enough to light themselves on fire. And then, of course, we do the horseback riding. And that's, again, we usually start with beginner or basic, kind of how to be on a horse and at least make it do certain things. So as an actor, you can at least get on a horse and know that you can turn it to the right or left to make it stop. And then we'll go from there for the people who are proficient enough with the horse and the stunts to combine them and do stunt riding.
Amazing. Yeah. So check them out, make sure. And I can vouch. They were always very fun. They're always super informative. Yeah, it's a great time, and obviously working with you on set was always really fun, but the workshops is kind of where you get some confidence, so that when camera's rolling and a whole production's around you, you're not thinking like, oh shit, I don't want to screw up, because I would imagine you want to have a confident mentality that this is going to go well. You don't want to be thinking, oh, don't fuck up. That's probably where you do things that lead to a fuck up. So yeah, get that training under your belt for sure.
Now, before we move on to the other question, I did have a follow-up. Do you do the driving stuff on your ranch as well? Like, do you have a separate place for the horses and the driving stuff?
So
the rent out a parking lot or something?
So the driving stuff, we've been doing it. It's at the Barrie Agriplex the last couple of times we've done it, just because it's a really big parking area. And they also offer both pavement and gravel because it's a different scenario for each type of roadway, right? Mm-hmm. So it's good to be able to work both because, you know, you might have been practicing for, you know, all your life on pavement, and then you're like, I'm a stunt driver, we can do this. And then you get called to do something on a dirt road and you're like, oh, well, the car's doing things that I didn't know it could do. And then bad things happen. So,
yeah, you want to be ready for all scenarios, yep. No matter what the situation, right?
Yep, exactly.
Now, Justin, what dream project do you aspire to create?
Oh, we have a couple projects in the work right now that would be kind of a period action and then a modern action drama. You know, obviously, I would love to do or get on a project like The Witcher or Game of Thrones and stuff like that would be fantastic. Being able to utilize both the horse aspect of the stunts as well as the you know, fighting and all the other stuff that we would do on those shows. I also really enjoy kind of the we'll call it cops and robbers or like the military style stuff, where we can use more modern things. So the stunt driving, being able to have scenes like Extraction, with Chris Hemsworth, where you have vehicles, some epic fight scenes, some like stunning camera work within the fights themselves, to really make it feel like you're there and part of the action, without it being POV, right? And then integrating all of that stuff like helicopters, your special effects, your driving, your stunts. That's the kind of stuff that I really want to get more into. And Toronto is wonderful. I would say we lack some of the bigger elements of stunt shows. And I know we've had stuff like Suicide Squad. You know, we just finished filming Mayor of Kingstown, which is a bigger action show for sure. But they're pretty few and far between. So I'm really working on trying to develop more stuff that we can shoot here in Toronto that is a bigger action venue so that we don't have to go to California or Vancouver to shoot some of these big action shows, right? Mm-hmm. And be able to showcase the talent that Toronto has. Because we have a ton of really talented stunt folk and stunt actors here. And it's a shame that we either have to go out west or down south to kind of get on some of the better stunt shows. So
are you going to make like your own John Wick or like set it in medieval times or set it in a spy genre or something like that?
So yeah, we've been working on a couple projects. Like I said, one of them is kind of a fantasy Viking show, which is going to allow us to be, you know, historical and fun, but not bound by, you know, history itself, right? So we can kind of have different genres or different types of characters be able to kind of pass through with the Vikings, right? And that's also going to help us to be a lot more diverse, right? Because we can have any person from any nation be able to kind of interact on this show and kind of show off the talent that we have for not just the stunt people, but, you know, our diverse stunters, you know, our women stunters, because we have some very, very talented folk here.
Just want to say, Justin, you had me at Vikings. Yeah. if you got use for some laughing Vikings, maybe we got a little co-production in the works. Absolutely. There too. So let us know. I have another sort of follow-up question. You've done so many cool things on so many cool shows. Is there one that, and maybe this is an impossible question, but if it is, please answer it. If it's not impossible, please answer it. But has there been a moment where, as you stepped onto set, you were like, I cannot believe I'm doing this. This is the coolest shit ever. This is dreams come true. That has stood of like above the others.
There's been a few times. I was on a show. It was a pilot episode that I don't think it ever got picked up, or if it did, it went to a different city. But I was providing sniper overwatch for this funeral procession that was going on. And I was on a 16-story building in Toronto with a sniper rifle, looking down at this church, right? And I was standing up there and I was watching the people in the office building, like across, taking pictures of me, because I'm in this flak jacket with the sniper rifle. And I thought, you know, there aren't too many people that get a chance to be on a roof in Toronto with a sniper rifle that aren't either the real Toronto police or that are getting shot at themselves by Toronto police. So that was pretty cool, just being able to be up there and doing that kind of stuff. Age of Samurai was another one where we had some A-list cast come in that were from Japan. They worked, two of them worked on 47 Ronin, Last Samurai, Westworld. So they were very well-rounded actors. And just getting to kind of bond with them and then come out into this beautiful forest area that was being viewed as Japan, because obviously we were in Canada. And then just, you know, 30, 40 guys in samurai armor on the horses, just having a crazy time. You know, that was almost surreal, right? That you get to do this and you're in a period piece with a totally different culture. And you're collaborating with them to make sure that, you know, it's historically accurate. You know, we're representing their culture, you know, up to their standards, and just getting to have fun, throw swords around all day and run around the forest.
And fun fact, when you were on the roof at that funeral procession, I was also working BG. I was down on the ground as like a civilian. I think it was like a sort of a UN. It was something international. Like there was all these world dignitaries. And yeah. I remember seeing your social media that day of a picture, like your POV from the roof. And yeah. I was down on the ground. Like, I wonder where Justin is up there. Yeah. And I was looking for the red laser on my forehead.
That's right.
But he spared me. He spared me and survived. Yes. Next question. Is there any advice that you would give to your former artist self? So if you look back, knowing what you know now, what would you tell yourself in the past?
Yeah, I would just say train harder and take more chances. You know, there was some times where, and I'm sure most of us as performers and artists have had, where you're like, really, is this the career that's for me? You know, it's hard to get into. I'm not making much money. I don't seem to be getting the breaks. You know, and for a long time, I tried to hold that Monday to Friday job or the 9-to-5 job, as well as acting and stunting. And it wasn't until I kind of took the leap that the career took off, right? And I was able to focus my time on training, getting out there and promoting myself and my business. That's the big thing. You just, you know, take the chance in yourself and do it and stay humble. That's the other thing. There's a lot of people out there that once they get a few shows under their belt, you can see the attitude change a bit. You know, and even myself, sometimes the ego comes into play and, you know, like, well, why did they go with that person instead of me? How? And then it's like, okay, it's just not right for the job. There's something else coming along and, you know, you just gotta take it as it comes and stay humble and just train and be the best you can be.
I love that. So the advice is quit your job, quit your 9-to-5 job. No, that's right. I mean, there is something to that. When you take that leap and if you're holding down 40 or 50 hours a week somewhere else, that's time that you could be devoting to marketing yourself or to training or auditioning.
Yeah.
Take the leap and nothing. It's very rare that someone has great things happen in their life where they're just got one foot in and one foot out. So if you're on that precipice, figure out a way to make it work and dive right in.
Yeah, absolutely. And it can be scary, right? You know, there was months where I'm like, am I going to pay rent? Am I going to eat? But, you know, I believed in myself and what I was doing. And, you know, it always worked out somehow. So
I love that. That's exciting. Yeah, and then you figure out all the deals. You're like, okay, I got $5 this day at Subway, and with the ramen noodle, like, you know, you figure out all your cheap meal places.
That's right. You go to set, and you're like, are you gonna throw out all that food that nobody's eating? Because I could take it home.
Right. The amount of times early on, primarily doing background, where at the like you go through once with your container. And then I would just, my second round through, my take home would just be all meat. I'm like, I don't need mashed potatoes. I don't need vegetables. It's just pile on the beef and the chicken. And then I would have like a week's worth of protein in my fridge from doing one day's background. So
yeah,
tips of the trade. Yeah. That's right. Not to mention all those all you can eat apples and peanut butter sandwiches.
That's
those
right.
Pretty amazing too.
Yeah. Just make sure everyone's going through the line first before you steal the food.
Of course.
Oh, yes. Yeah. You have to be considerate when you're taking food from set.
Right. Right. All right, Brandon, you got something else for us?
I do. I have a quote to inspire our week. So today's quote is, "The most dangerous place is in your safety zone." And I think this is perfect for what we've just been talking about. Take the leap. I sometimes it feels scary, and I'm in that same position now where I'm trying to take the leap in doing more stuff in the industry and trying to learn more about how this industry works and how you can survive without just acting. And you can do it too.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Amazing. Well, listeners, make sure you hit that like and subscribe button on all the podcast platforms. If you haven't hit us up on Instagram, follow us at Laughing Vikings and tell all your friends. Take screenshots of this or share the podcast link and tag some of your actor friends. And certainly everyone out there in the world of stunts, please check out steelandsteed.ca. Check out Justin. And I want to thank you, Justin, for being here today. And thank you for some of my favorite experiences in TV and film. We're working on Civil War Chronicles and being involved in fights. And those are all things that never in my real life would I ever, I'd be the last person to sign up for the military. I'd be like, no thanks. I don't want to get shot. I don't want to get punched. I don't want a bayonet through the face. None of those things. But I always felt very safe in your hands and on your team. And there always was really a band of brothers type camaraderie that you are looking out for the guy on the other side of you and making sure that he finishes the day safe. So thank you for that. They've been amazing, amazing memories. And I look forward to doing it again. Even though I don't like it in real life, I'd happily take a bayonet to the face as long as you're involved. So,
absolutely.
Yes. So
I look forward to it as well. Thank you.
Yeah. All righty. Great.
Thank you, everyone. Have a fantastic week. And thank you, Justin, for joining us. We'll see you all next Monday.
All right. Goodbye. Goodbye.